From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. This hour, conversations with the current Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and his Democratic Party opponent. In our first half hour, we'll talk with Republican Bill Northey. Northey is a fourth-generation farmer from Spirit Lake. He's serving his first term as Secretary of Agriculture after being elected in 2006. Then in our second half hour, we'll talk with Democratic Iowa Secretary of Agriculture candidate Francis Tickey. Tickey and his wife own and operate a grass-based dairy farm near Fairfield. What are your concerns about agriculture in the state? Our conversation starts right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this hour, conversations with the current Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, Republican Bill Northey, and his Democratic Party opponent, Francis Tickey. We'll hear from Francis Tickey in our second half hour. Right now, we're joined by Bill Northey, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. He's a fourth-generation farmer from Spirit Lake, and Northey is in his first term as Secretary of Agriculture after being elected in 2006. Good afternoon to you, Secretary Northey.
Great to be on with you, Ben.
I want to reach out to our listeners for this hour and this half hour with Bill Northey. What are your concerns as a consumer, as a farmer, about agriculture in our state? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Our email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Secretary Northey, you've been in office for 4 years. What do you look to as your major accomplishments?
Well, we worked at several different things, as we talked about 4 years ago. We were looking at the opportunities in Iowa to take advantage of renewable fuels and be able to grow the ethanol industry and to grow the industries around that. Not only the jobs, we have 40 ethanol plants in Iowa, not only those jobs there, but the co-products that are produced in those ethanol plants help us to be able to expand, I think, the cattle feeding industry is in Iowa as well. And then certainly we see the impact on prices right now and the impact on the economics of Iowa because of that renewable fuels industry. Secondly, we talked about protecting our natural resources, our soil. We have a very special state for agriculture. As folks around the world think about agriculture, one of the places they think about how it's done well is in Iowa. And while we certainly can do better, we need to be able to protect those natural resources out there. We have some of the best soil in the world, and we worked hard at trying to make sure that soil stays on the land. Worked at water quality issues as well. In fact, headed off this afternoon, continuing our trip across the state to be able to get to a dedication for a nutrient reduction wetland. And where we're looking at being able to use some new tools out there to reduce the nitrogen and phosphorus that leaves our farms. And then thirdly, telling that story of Iowa agriculture and getting out and talking about it. Agriculture is about 25% of the state's economy. It's a huge economic engine for those that are involved in ag and, for many cases, those that don't even realize they're involved in ag, whether it's the processing side or producing things for farmers or even banking and insurance that are here because of agriculture. So about 25% of the state's economy, a big deal. It's a big deal in our small towns, certainly, but it's a big deal in our cities like Cedar Rapids and other places. And I guess the other thing that we've certainly had to deal with the last 4 years as well is balancing a budget. Our budget was cut from 2008 to 2010 by 23%. We were, in 2010, receiving the same amount of the Department of Ag as we received back in 1994. And so we had to find a way to be able to stretch those dollars as far as we can, not spend any more than we got, but still get the meat inspection and dairy inspection and feed and fertilizer inspection, the other things, including conservation, done as much as we could with those limited resources. So that was a real challenge. I'm sure it will be a challenge in the future as well.
Okay, I wanted to go back and touch on many of the things that you mentioned, water quality, conservation, renewable fuels. But first, I want to talk about local control as a hot-button issue in the state. The question of who decides grants permission for the siting of large livestock confinements. It used to be that counties decided that. Now the state does. Who should decide, in your opinion?
Well, I think it should be a set of rules that are developed on a statewide basis, and that's the way it's been for quite a while now. And you have a farmer that wants to build a livestock facility, wants to raise livestock in an area. He needs to know what those rules are, and they shouldn't change from place to place. So I think we would have some counties out there, if it was done on a county-by-county basis, that really soften up those rules and let producers build maybe where they shouldn't build. We'd have other counties that wouldn't let any producers build at all. Okay. And I think we need a set of standards, and I think we have a set of standards that recognizes both the needs of those that are trying to raise livestock, but also that requires a setback from other neighbors. And in fact, I think in the last few years, you've seen much less contention over those issues than what you saw years ago as those rules have been enacted in those local areas.
So what do you say to those rural Iowans who say their quality of life has been negatively impacted by the presence of large livestock confinements?
I think, you know, that we have had livestock in rural areas for a long, long time. There's dust out there. There's lots of things that happen in agriculture that are part of what we have done in agriculture. And we certainly have had livestock in agriculture for a long, long time. And we have some folks that are glad to live around it and other folks that aren't as glad to live around it. We will continue to have discussion about what those rules are on the statewide basis, and I think folks have been active in those discussions. At some point, you have to come to conclusions, and in some cases, you'd have some folks that don't want livestock production at all, and if they were in control of it, we'd lose half our agriculture in the state. We produce about $20 billion worth of ag products in Iowa. Actually, it's more than that now, but the latest numbers, solid numbers we have, and about $10 billion of that is livestock production. And that's a very, very important part of the industry. It's certainly an important part of the demand for the corn and soybeans out here as well.
Your questions for Bill Northey, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Secretary Northey, one of the major recent agricultural stories out of Iowa put our state, of course, in a very bad light nationally. The recall of over half a billion eggs from two Iowa egg producers, DeCoster and Hillendale, due to salmonella. What role did your office have in this recall?
So the agency that controls the egg quality is the Food and Drug Administration, and they do all the egg surveys out there and protect the safety of those eggs. They were the ones that called for the recall. And so we're supportive and certainly have had conversations where they needed help in different things we would provide folks, but they're the control agency. And
Can your office do anything to prevent this from happening again, have any part in preventing this disaster again?
Well, we'd need authority by the state legislature to require us to do or allow us to do testing for food safety. We are not allowed to go into private agencies or private farms to do testing for feed or food safety unless the legislature desired for us to do that, just as we can come into other businesses without some authority by state government. So we do feed testing. We do commercial feed testing where folks are buying feed from someone else. That, though, is done on a consumer protection basis so that the buyer of the feed knows what they're getting, not in a food safety business or situation. We do have a contract that we have just signed with Food and Drug Administration to do some testing for them under their authority, because it's Food and Drug that has the authority on food safety. We will do some testing of feed safety, looking for salmonella in feed. In this case, it doesn't sound like it came into that operation in feed. It came into that operation because they were mismanaging the actual barns and allowing rodents and birds into those barns. Right now, that is the authority of FDA, and I think it makes sense. that is a federal standard, because I think we want our eggs on our shelves in Iowa to be safe, whether they came from Ohio or Wisconsin or Iowa. And so I think we should have federal standards that set up that food safety.
Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship Bill Northey with us for this first half hour, 1-866-780-9100. Secretary Northey, one of the accomplishments, challenges that you mentioned at the outset of this program was renewable fuels. Your opponent has expressed the need to go beyond corn-based ethanol to help wean farmers off petroleum. Are there other ways Iowa can utilize its corn crop to power agriculture and get farmers off the out-of-control fuel prices?
Yeah, I think we are certainly seeing a lot of investment in new technologies. And the thing that's happened is because we have renewable fuels and we have that corn-based ethanol, we're able to look at those next generations. I just visited 2 weeks ago the ethanol plant up at Emmitsburg, up in northwest Iowa. They're using corn cobs and corn stalks. They're starting to collect those and plan to use that for ethanol production up there. They've got some dollars from the state of Iowa, as well as some dollars from the U.S. Department of Energy to build that plant and put that plant into place. So I think there are a lot of new things that can come. Now, I think while we do that, we need to recognize we have a very successful existing ethanol industry in the state. And we don't want to ignore that, and we don't want to drop the ball on that. For I think that next generation of investors, whether they're investing in their own business or investing in other businesses in renewable fuels, are going to watch to see what's happening in that corn-based ethanol industry. And if we drop the ball and drop all support for that industry and cause economic problems within that industry, I think we will cause folks to back away from future investment. If we do the same things that we did in biodiesel, and that's the federal folks that have dropped the tax incentive for biodiesel, we now have thousands of folks in Iowa that are not at work, not producing biodiesel at biodiesel plants, and it causes investors to be very nervous about looking to future generations, because these technologies are not easy. They're going to take some real investment. They're going to take some science changes. They're going to take some real risk takers to step up to do that. And probably many of them for the start will take some incentive, sometime tax credit or some other kind of incentive. And if it looks like the federal government steps away very quickly from some of those before the industry is really ready to compete, then I think much of that future investment is likely to go away as well.
Your questions for Bill Northey, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, 1-866-780-9100. Joining us, first of all, let's go to our phones for David in Forest City. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Well, when you did ask Mr. Northey regarding the folks who are affected by the hog factory farms or the cattle factory farms, he didn't answer the question at all. He avoided the question. And the question is, what kind of rights do people have who live by these things, who were there before these operations were put in place, and now have to suffer the results of that? I'd like to hear what Mr. Northey says about that and not go into another area of the conversation.
Okay, David, did this personally affect you?
Yes, it did.
Okay, so you lived in an area, and then along comes a large livestock confinement in your area, and you would say decreased your quality of life.
We've lived here for some time, and the operation, we fought this tooth and nail and finally resolved it kind of ourselves. But, yes, this was going to be a large operation. It was going to be very close to us, and we really had very few rights about it. And all we heard was, well, this is an agricultural area.
Okay.
I agree it is, but other people live here, too.
David, let's get an answer. How do we give those people rights? Does David have a claim here, Bill Northey? He has some rights. He lived there before, doesn't he? How do you find that balance?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough balance. It is a tough balance. And we do have rules that require them to comply with those rules before they build a facility. Those rules can change. They've been set up, rightly or wrongly, by the state legislature and what the setbacks need to be And in some cases, people feel like those setbacks are plenty and that that's not a problem. In other cases, they feel like they're not enough.
Okay, so what rights does someone like David have who's existed on the land, lived on the land, and in terms of the say they might have in a nearby large livestock confinement?
They certainly have the right to engage in the political process to set those rules.
Voting is it? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Otherwise, you end up with a situation, and I think we do need rules. I do think we need rules that everybody knows what needs to happen. And otherwise, you do have to think as well about that farmer, that young farmer that's in an area that wants to build a livestock facility. And if one neighbor can say, you will not be able to build that facility because I don't want that facility within 1 or 2 or 5 miles away from my farm, my house, then that farmer as well loses their rights to be able to build their facility. Right now, they are restricted on where they can put those facilities, and some of the farmers would argue that they've lost some of those rights to build the facilities where they need to. So size decided that we do need to restrict where they can build and where they need to be.
Susan,
And have sorted to what they believe is a balance.
Susan from Twitter asks in this conversation, why can't the state set minimum standards and then let local control decide whether additional controls are needed?
The challenge is what if you set up additional controls that are allowed at the local level, you really then have local controls.
Mm-hmm.
And you then can stop almost any livestock operation that you want if that's decided locally. Whoever's politically the most popular or most proficient in that local area is likely to either get their operation done no matter what or to be able to stop any operation from building or expanding in a certain area. So
that's
been the decision, is to have those statewide controls. And the legislature has spent a lot of time discussing it and decided that, although not perfect, that's the best solution.
Okay. We want to move on from local control. A lot of other issues I'm afraid we won't get to, but let's try to get some of the other issues of water quality, for instance. Iowa's water quality, our rivers, lakes, and streams, is not that great. Much of this is due to agricultural runoff. How do we improve water quality?
We need to change and continue to improve the practices out in the field. I think farmers have improved, but we've got a lot of work to do yet.
What practices specifically?
Well, certainly one of those is soil conservation practices, restricting the erosion on these farms. So you're looking at conservation tillage that's reduced the amount of soil erosion into our rivers, lakes, and streams. We're looking at different practices and better nitrogen management. We use nitrogen fertilizer to raise corn, and there are different tools to be able to try and keep that nitrogen on the farm, mm-hmm. in the field, as opposed to having it run off. And these water quality wetlands, one of the ones that we'll go and visit today, what they're designed to do is actually catch that water after it leaves these farming areas and reduce the nitrogen in that water coming off of these areas, so that reduces the nitrogen.
So what is your office doing to encourage or force farmers into these better practices to improve water quality?
We're spending a lot of time working on these new technologies, including we have built or under construction about 70 of these wetlands. We've more than doubled the number of these wetlands on the farms or in the farming areas in the last 4 years. We're working with the Hypoxia Task Force to develop as well some voluntary programs where farmers can apply and learn from new technologies, including cover crops, site-specific nitrogen applications, timing of nitrogen applications, even in some cases some crops that look like they may need less nitrogen and are more efficient. Like farmers right now are applying less nitrogen per bushel of corn that is yielded than what they historically have. So we have seen some real reduction in application. We've seen some reduction as well in nitrogen that comes off our farms, and certainly a large reduction in the amount of erosion coming off our farms as well.
Pam in Dubuque writes us an email, and she asks this question: how do the policies promoted and implemented by the Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship help to mitigate and prevent flooding in Iowa? What have you done there since the big 08 flooding and flooding after that as well, of course?
Certainly some of the conservation practices that we put on the land have an impact in how much water and how quickly that water comes off the farm. We had some areas where we had some flash flooding, and it's hard to do it. It's such that you prevent that large-scale kind of flooding that we had in 2008. But you can do some pieces, and you can look at small areas. We had some areas that had some flash flooding that we worked with local landowners and are building conservation practices, terraces, grass waterways, as well as water retention basins, where that water, when you get a 4-inch or 6-inch or 8-inch storm, the more of that water will be held back in that area and prevent flooding in local areas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you end up with a 2008 where you have, you know, half a year's rain in a handful of months, the soil simply cannot hold all that water. We had floodplains here long before we had farming, and floods can happen. But we can do some more of these pieces. We've got some of them on the ground. We've instituted some of them over the last couple of years, and I think we'll have some technology that will help folks do even more of that down the road.
Okay, just a couple more minutes. We have with Bill Northey, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. We wanted to put out this email from Drew in Ames. He writes, Bill Northey says he wants to conserve the land and protect the water. Does he support voting yes on the Iowa's water and land legacy ballot question? To remind our listeners, this is a proposed amendment on our ballot this November to create a dedicated trust fund for protecting and enhancing water quality, natural areas, and Iowa soils. Secretary Northey.
That ballot measure would have some dollars potentially if once there is a sales tax and it would go into place. That would send some dollars to the Department of Agriculture to work with producers to be able to put more practices on the ground. In that case, we have a lot of producers that are interested in that, and a lot in the conservation community. I personally have not taken a position, yes or no, on it.
Why won't you take a position? Why don't you take a position? You have a position. You don't want to air it publicly.
No, I've decided not to take a position. Yes or no. I want the public to be able to make up their own mind, and certainly they have engaged a lot in that issue. And I think that they will. I think there'd be some good things happen. There's certainly, as well, some challenges in increasing taxes and the way that some of those dollars would be spent. I think there's a lot of arguments on both sides of that issue, and I'm looking forward to put into practice whatever they decide to vote on this time.
Very quickly, if the polls are to be believed, Iowa could soon have a Republican governor. If Terry Branstad wins, how would having a fellow Republican in the governor's mansion change your approach? Easier to get things done?
You know, I think I certainly got along very well with Governor Culver, and we weren't cross ways generally. I do think that Terry Branstad is a great appreciator of agriculture and the opportunities and certainly economic development that can come from agriculture in this state. So I personally would very much look forward to that.
Okay, thank you very much. Bill Northey, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ben.
And when we come back, we'll talk to Bill Northey's opponent in this election, Democratic Iowa Secretary of Agriculture candidate Francis Tickey. That's when we return. Please give us your thoughts, concerns, questions about agriculture in Iowa. Are you a farmer? Of course, you're a consumer. Let us know, 1-866-780-9100. Back in just a few minutes with more of The Exchange. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Great to have you with us over the noon hour. And with that midterm election just a week away, tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll talk about the interest groups pouring money into Iowa races, run down the list of national figures visiting the state in these, the final days of the 2010 election cycle, and what that may tell us about 2012. My guests tomorrow, Iowa State University political science professor Stefan Schmidt and co-college professor Bruce Nesmith. Tomorrow on The Exchange, our regular politics day on Wednesday. This hour, we're having conversations with the current Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and and his Democratic Party opponent in the first half hour. If you were with us, we heard from Bill Northey, current Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. Joining me now, Democratic Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, candidate Francis Tickey. Welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben.
Let's start off by having you tell us what qualifies you, what part of your background qualifies you to be Secretary of Agriculture and Land Stewardship in Iowa.
Well, I've been a full-time farmer for 27 years. I'm also a scientist by training, have a PhD in agronomy with a soil fertility specialty, and I have worked at the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. in the past as National Program Leader for Soil Science. So I've seen agriculture as a program leader, as a scientist, and also as a farmer. And currently, my wife Susan and I have an 80-cow dairy farm. It's a grazing dairy farm, unlike a confinement animal feeding operation, and it's also organic. And we're unique in another regard, and that is that we process our milk on the farm. So we make bottled milk, yogurt, and cheese, and we market it all locally through grocery stores and restaurants.
Okay, we want to reach out to our listeners for this half hour. We want to have your concerns and questions as a consumer. Perhaps you work in agriculture as well. What are your concerns and questions about agriculture in Iowa for Francis Tickey? 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. So what do you see, Francis Tickey, as the major challenges facing Iowa agriculture in these coming years?
Well, I think a couple of the major challenges are, number one, our increasing severity of weather events due to climate change. We've all seen how, especially in eastern Iowa, the extreme weather events we've been having, and that's a huge challenge for Iowa agriculture. So the result is that we need more resilience on the landscape. But another challenge that is at least as big is energy. Iowa agriculture, if you look at it anywhere, it's highly dependent upon cheap fossil fuels. We couldn't farm the way we do today without cheap fossil fuels. The problem is we are at the end of the cheap fossil fuel era. We saw 2 years ago when price of oil spiked and fell quickly, it caused tremendous whipsaw action in agriculture. So that's a major concern.
Okay. So let's pick up on that. The renewable fuels, energy is a topic that we touched on with Secretary Northey in our first half hour. Discuss your vision for the state's ethanol industry. We're doing quite well in subsidizing, encouraging that industry, aren't we?
Well, the ethanol industry has grown quickly in Iowa, and frankly, I think it's overgrown a bit. Even my opponent will say, well, we built a few too many ethanol plants. And that's a problem, is that one of the results was we saw some bankruptcy when we saw a downturn in the economy. So I'm concerned that we don't continue to overbuild. If, for example, the price of oil goes through the roof again, we don't want to see another building spree. So what I'm calling for is a moratorium on any more public funding for corn ethanol plants. Now, I'm saying we should protect the investment we have. We need to renew those federal subsidies until the ethanol industry becomes self-sufficient so we can protect our investment. But let's take our resources we may have in the future and invest them in that next generation of biofuels that, number one, are more sustainable and truly renewable, and secondly, can be a farm scale, so it would power farmers would retain the profits. And thirdly, it should power agriculture, not cars. We're making biofuels for cars, so we're not doing anything to secure the energy future for agriculture.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean in other directions in terms of biofuels?
Well, there is a very promising technology being developed now called pyrolysis, and it's a process of heating biomass in the absence of oxygen, and it produces something called bio-oil and something called biochar. And the bio-oil can be made refined into gasoline and diesel. And a couple key things about it is, one is it can use perennial crops, any kind of biomass. And so we could use prairie plants or perennial crops that will protect the landscape better. And the second thing is it can be done on a smaller scale. So what we need to do is develop the technology to be able to do it at a farm scale so that the profits stay at the farm level. And we can produce a product that the farmers will first of all have a high-value product. And as the technology develops, we can begin to use this fuel on the farm to power the farm.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about an issue that was touched off in our first half hour, the local control issue, and also the fact that gubernatorial candidate Terry Branstad has said the state will never allow local governments to decide whether large-scale animal confinement operations can be built in their areas. Is siting best handled on a statewide or county-by-county basis? How would you approach the issue of local control?
I think county governments should have a say in siting. There's a lot of misconception about this. If we had local control over siting, that would not take away the DNR's set of rules for regulating CAFOs. I think Mr. Northey said in the last half hour that some places there would be livestock put where they shouldn't be. Well, the whole set of of siting that's already current at the DNR would stay there. This would be for a more specific siting at the local level. So then the whole set of rules for mineral management plans and all this regulatory framework would stay at the DNR. Siting is only for specific within the county. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much in favor of giving counties the authority to be able to have control over siting.
So what about the concern that having this on a county-by-county basis would be to the detriment of hog producers, other livestock producers, in having to deal with 99 different policies instead of a statewide policy?
It's not 99. They'd only deal with the one in their county. That's a red herring argument that there'd be 99 sets of rules. And the thing is, though, this is just basic democracy. And one thing that people don't understand is that the manure from a CAFO is not manure. Secretary Northey said livestock have been in rural areas for a long time, but that's not what we're smelling. When you smell this odor from a CAFO, that is not the livestock manure. These are compounds that are created in the liquid manure pit, and like hydrogen sulfide and ammonia. These are there are over 300 compounds created in the volatile organic compounds created in the manure pit. And these are the toxic compounds that cause the odor and cause the problems in the rural countryside. So this is not siting livestock. This is really an industrial process.
Okay. If Terry Branstad becomes, again, the Iowa's governor, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, should you be elected, would have really little power against the governor in terms of local control, would you not?
Well, I think the role of the Secretary of Agriculture should be to provide vision and leadership for where agriculture can go and should interact with the governor and also with the legislature to provide that leadership. And if Branstad were elected, it may change things, but I always try to maintain a cordial relationship. I've sat on, for example, the Environmental Protection Commission and had many public debates with on this issue of CAFOs and so on, but I've always tried to maintain a cordial relationship with the opposition, and I would do that regardless of who's elected governor.
Let's talk about the egg recall. We talked about that in our first half hour with Secretary Northey. You've criticized your opponent for the inspection process for the Wright County egg facility involved in the egg recall due to the salmonella contamination. But as Secretary Northey stated in the first half hour, that Iowa Secretary of Agriculture doesn't really have jurisdiction over those facilities, does he?
Well, that's where leadership comes in again, is that I think that we should be proactive here in Iowa to put in place a set of regulations. The FDA has a new egg rule, but it's not adequate. If you remember, the state of Maine had Jack DeCoster, still does have Jack DeCoster there, and because of that, because of the violations, they put in place their own state regulatory program for salmonella and eggs. It's very successful, and I've spoken with them. I think we should adopt a program like Maine has here in Iowa, because we're the number one egg producer in the country, and we have Jack DeCoster in Iowa. So we should be proactive and put into place a program like what they have in Maine to be sure our eggs are safe. And if over time FDA proves they have the wherewithal to ensure the safety of our eggs, which they have not demonstrated yet, then we could suspend our program.
Okay, we have the Democratic Iowa Secretary of Agriculture candidate Francis Tickey with us for the remainder of the hour. Your questions, comments, concerns about agriculture in the state, whether you're a farmer or a consumer, 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, Barb in Dexter writes, as a row crop farmer, I pay tax of 0.03 cents on every dollar I spend on dry fertilizers that I put on my land. This is a groundwater tax and goes to the Department of Agriculture. How is this tax used, and do people use manure for their fertilizer pay this groundwater surcharge, or should they?
Well, some of the tax money for fertilizer goes to the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture to fund that, and it was due to a groundwater protection bill, which is a good thing. So I think that's a good thing to invest these tax dollars into helping protect our environment. And we do have, for animal manure, we have manure management plans that are required by the DNR. And the problem is that DNR does not have adequate staff to ensure that these manure management plans are properly followed. And so, though in theory, all manure should be kept in place right where it needs to be and never get into the water, that does not happen in reality.
It is mentioned on your website, Francis Tickey, that about 80% of the food consumed in Iowa is grown outside the state, that reversing this trend would create a significant economic opportunity, you say on the website. What money is our current agriculture policy leaving on the table?
Well, about $8 billion worth of food that we eat in Iowa every year, and 80 to 90% of that's imported. So there's a tremendous amount of opportunity for economic development, but also for to have fresher food, healthier food, safer food, and more diversity on the landscape.
Okay, and is this what you mean when you express a number of times that the focus on agriculture in Iowa should be on quality, not just quantity?
Well, I think we need diversity, and certainly Iowa's always going to be a strong producer of commodity crops. But we should look to how we can produce more of the food we eat in Iowa, right here in Iowa. And even for the sake of food security, grocery stores only have about 3 days' worth of food in them. If there's some major disruptive event due to terrorism or transportation breakdowns, it would be helpful to have more food here available locally. So there are a lot of reasons why we could grow more food, but economic development is a great one.
Mm-hmm. How do we go about that, going to more eating more of the food that is actually produced in Iowa?
Well, one thing I would do if elected is reactivate the Iowa Food Policy Council, which is already now trying to get going. And it was active during the early days of Governor Vilsack, and it was actually the first food policy council in the nation. But now it's been inactive. And what I would do is give the Food Policy Council the charge to look for policies that we could use here in Iowa, for example, to connect farmers with local high schools, university cafeterias, other institutions. There are a lot of innovative policies going on around the country right now that we could adopt here in Iowa, and I think we could gain a lot more local production.
Are there states doing a better job of consuming their own food than Iowa? Are there agriculture states?
Last year, Illinois passed a law that the goal of which was that by the year 2020, they would that 10-20% of the food purchased by state-funded institutions like schools and hospitals would be grown in Illinois. That's a great goal, and that's something that we could do here in Iowa.
Mm. After you announced your bid for this office, the Republican Party of Iowa issued a statement referring to your, quote, radical agenda. That's, of course, some partisan hyperbole. But how do you bridge that gap between your, what we might call a progressive platform, and the ideas of a more industrial-minded rural farmer?
Well, I think that my agenda is very conservative. I'm for conserving soil, conserving water quality, conserving family farms, and conserving rural communities. So to me, this is true conservation. I'm a true conservative, I'd say. And so I think that what you may call progressive, these are really bringing conservation back into agriculture, true conservation. And I think that we need to look that we need a systemic change in our agriculture. It's not going to be enough just to build a few more terraces, a little more no-till with a little more Roundup, because we need to have more cover on the landscape. Two-thirds of Iowa's landscape is covered in corn and soybeans. It's a very vulnerable kind of a landscape. We saw with the heavy rainfalls in 2008, 10% of Iowa's cropland had 20 ton per acre or more of erosion. And the soil regenerates, science shows, at about a rate of about a half a ton per acre per year. Corn and soybean production averages about 5 tons per acre per year of erosion. Clearly, we're on a collision course with lack of sustainability here. So we need systemic change. We need to have more perennials on the landscape. And if we can convert our biofuels to perennial cropping systems, we'll make tremendous progress. A third of our corn crop now goes to corn for ethanol. A third of our corn crop goes to ethanol production. So if we can convert our biofuels to perennials, we'll make a lot of progress towards diversifying our landscaping, making it more resilient.
Your questions for Francis Tickey, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Let's do go to the phones. Max is joining us from Windsor Heights. Good afternoon, Max. Welcome to our program.
Hi. Glad to be on. Say, Dr. Tickey, I wonder where your funding comes from for your campaign, and I think you do have a radical agenda, and it sounds like you want to represent the people of Iowa rather than represent massive, big agriculture, which sounds like the Republican Party and your opponents, you know, are obviously well-funded by these industries, and how do you compete with that?
Well, it's true that my opponent is funded by Monsanto, PACs, and DuPont, and Syngenta, and about two dozen agribusiness PACs, and our money basically is coming from grassroots. And so I guess I want to represent all of agriculture. And it's not like I'm not going to represent commodity agriculture. That's important. And we have to recognize, too, that it's taken many years for Iowa agriculture to get to where it is today. It's not going to change overnight. But it is true that if we're going to change it at all, we need to have a vision for where we're going. We need to begin to take steps in that direction. So that's why I'm running. We need vision and leadership.
Without this funding, though, what does that have to say about the viability of you as a candidate without the funding that your opponent has?
Well, we actually are very much a grassroots campaign. And not only are we getting funding from people all over the country, but mostly in the state of Iowa, but we have a lot of endorsements from around the country. Michael Pollan, the writer, has endorsed our campaign. Bill McKibben, Wes Jackson, Wendell Berry, Robert Kinner, the director of the Movie Food Inc., all these people, these national figures, have endorsed our campaign. And that's helped turn out the grassroots people for funding our campaign.
We haven't yet touched on wind power. Can you talk about your vision there for wind power in Iowa, agriculture, how your vision for wind power differs from your opponent, Secretary Northey?
Well, I would like to see the next generation of wind systems developed for agriculture, and that means mid-sized wind turbines on farms all across Iowa, so the wind that blows over the farm powers the farm. Now it's true we have 20% of our electricity comes from wind. That's a great thing. But when farmers have corporate-owned wind turbines on their land from wind farms, they still pay retail rates for the electricity. So they're selling cheap and buying high. And if we can have put them on farms all across Iowa, then the wind that blows over the farm powers the farm, and the profits stay on the farm and in the rural community. And also that distributed production means that we don't have to build big transmission lines because the electricity produced would be used locally on the farm and in the vicinity.
How is that different than Secretary Northey's vision?
I don't know if he's spoken much about wind, for that matter, except that we have a lot.
Okay. How much capacity do you think there's out there still for wind in Iowa? We know when I'm on the interstate, of course, you see the huge turbine blades being hauled around the state. They're being thrown up very quickly.
Oh, the wind capacity in Iowa, the American Wind Energy Association says that we have like 10 to 20 times more capacity than we have need for electricity. So what we need to do is look to the future, ways we can harness that wind and store it. There's some exciting technology being developed to use wind power to make ammonia. And ammonia can be used in internal combustion engines like tractors and vehicles on the highway. So we can store wind in a liquid fuel. That's a tremendous thing we should really get on to developing.
Okay, Susan in Marble Rock follows up on our discussion here of wind. You advocate the wide use of wind turbines, she writes on your website. Wind turbines can cost thousands or millions of dollars. How can these be affordable for Iowa farmers? What could you do as Secretary of Agriculture to make them widely available?
Great question, because we should use what the Europeans have used to get solar on the ground quickly, and it's called feed-in tariff policies. And this is a policy that would require power companies to pay a higher rate of return per kilowatt hour for the initial years of, in this case, mid-sized wind turbines. And that would allow the farmer or landowner to pay for that machine during the early years of the operation. And then after those initial years, the rate of pay would fall down to wholesale rates. And then the power company would have cheap green energy for the life of that turbine. Meanwhile, the farmer or landowner would have the machine paid for and would be a profit center and would also produce the electricity for the farm.
This election, voters are deciding whether to amend Iowa's constitution. This proposed amendment, also discussed with Secretary Northey, he refused to take a position on this amendment. It would create a dedicated trust fund for protecting and enhancing water quality, natural areas, and Iowa soils. The measure would ensure that any future sales tax would put 0.375 in the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund. Will you take a stand on this? Should people vote yes or no, and why?
Absolutely. I think the Secretary of Agriculture should provide leadership and say what he thinks. And yes, absolutely, I would be in favor of it because we are one of the least lowest funded states in the country as far as soil and water conservation monies. And we certainly have a big need. We have 434 impaired waters in Iowa. We have a big need to improve our water quality.
Even though this is hinged on sales tax increases, if there's no sales tax increase, this fund gets no money.
That's right. It's a matter of future funding. But the legislature, 90% of the legislators from both parties approved of this. And so I think it's a good thing and we should move forward with it.
Okay. Joan writes, how will you be able to work in a cooperative manner with farmers who employ chemicals, pesticides, genetically engineered seeds in the standard corn and soybean crop and may consider your ideas impractical?
Well, there's room for everybody at the table here. And so I think that we shouldn't look for a silver bullet, as Bill McKibben, who was here recently, said we should look for silver buckshot, do a lot of things well. And we aren't going to change agriculture overnight. And so commodity agriculture will be here for some time. But that doesn't mean we can't move in a more sustainable direction. There are a lot of things we can do with a silver buckshot to move us in the more sustainable direction, including putting more perennials on the landscape, more cover crops, wetlands, a lot of things that we can do to improve, but it's not going to be one silver bullet kind of thing that's going to solve our problem.
So genetically modified seeds, genetically engineered seeds, your position on that, generally speaking?
Well, I have several concerns. One is that the patents have resulted in tremendous monopoly of the seed industry. It's a big problem for farmers. It's getting worse all the time. And the public in general is concerned to some degree, and polls show that people favor labeling of genetically modified organisms, and I support that. I also am concerned that the independent research, some of it that's been done on GMOs and on feeding trials, have raised some red flags due to organ failure, low birth weight rates, a lot of things that have come up in some of these independent feeding trials. I do not think we are adequately testing GMOs for their health effects, and I think we should have a more rigorous testing program for health effects of transgenic crops.
Okay. Francis Tickey, thank you very much for being with us this half hour and having experiencing sort of a buckshot of questions from me and from our listeners as well. Democratic Iowa Secretary of Agriculture candidate Francis Tickey, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Don't forget, tomorrow it's Wednesday Politics Day with the election about a week away. You'll want to tune in. Iowa State University political science professor Stefan Schmidt is joining us tomorrow on this at this time. Co-college professor Bruce Nesmith. Tomorrow on The Exchange. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.